right, so we're on a new section, right? We're talking about what is faithful parenting. Kind of, if we were going to think about our first lesson, right? Our goal, right? Our goal is God's glory, right? And we talked about how we have all these great goals for our kids, that they grow up, they have a wonderful life, they're saved, they become believers, they're protected from sin. So all those are wonderful goals that fell under that ultimate goal of God's glory. And the way that we talked about attaining that was faithfully obeying his commands, leading and parenting our kids the way that he guides us. So that's what we're getting into now, is what does that look like? And so we're kind of an introduction here, but our topic in lesson two is how to establish the authority structure. What does authority look like in the parenting with your kids? So, a couple of comparisons here. So, this is from an anthropologist, Eleanor Oakes. She and her colleagues engaged in this study comparing American Samoa and Peru with American middle-class families. And here's some summary of the findings. The children of Samoa, they serve food to their elders, waiting patiently in front of them before they eat. They're shown in a video where a girl of five is climbing a tall tree to harvest papaya. She's helping haul logs that are thicker than her legs to stoke the fire. By contrast, the U.S. videos showed the L.A. parents focusing more on the children, using simple talk with them, doing most of the housework, and quickly intervening when the kids had trouble. In some cases, the children routinely asked the parents to do tasks like getting them silverware. How am I supposed to cut my food? Asking children to do a task led to much negotiation. When parents ask, it sounded often like they're asking for a favor, not making a demand. Researchers said that oftentimes it was parents said that it was just too much to ask to intervene with their behavior. So, for instance, on one video exchange, you have the Ben, 8-year-old. Whoa, this is just random. It's not our 8-year-old Ben.
Yeah.
So an 8-year-old named Ben sprawled out on a couch near the front door, lifting his white high-top sneaker. "Dad, untie my shoe," he pleads. His father says, "Ben, you need to say please." "Please untie my shoe," says the child. After his father hands the shoe back to him, Ben says, "Please put my shoe on and tie it. And bring me some..." No, he doesn't. So, "Please get my coat from the closet." Then his father says, "Ben, you should get that yourself. Isn't it amazing," that says Dr. Oakes, "that it's only after he escalates that the dad asks him to do something for himself." So we have some kind of extremes here, right? We could think about different cultures, different times in history, very different approaches to the relationship between the parents. So when you think about that little description, what's the general way that you would say that the children in Samoa and in Peru, how do they view the role of the kids? What are some basic things? What role do the kids play in the family?
Help out wherever
is needed. Yeah, help out wherever is needed.
Slave labor.
Slave labor. Yeah. We see them doing, what kind of things do we see them doing?
Practical life application.
Yeah.
Things.
Yeah.
Seems to be a very high kind of respect for the elderly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the sense we see them waiting on them, serving them. Mm-hmm. Also, we see that they're expected to do, you know, tasks that we might not think they're able to do, right? They're hauling heavy, you know, limbs and climbing the trees and get on up there.
Probably having the time of their life, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We, yesterday, we did a small amount of work on Luke's car, and I had Ben come out and help, and Chris said later, he said, "I didn't really like that." He didn't really enjoy the labor, but he got to help a little bit and hold the light. If you've ever had that, can be a traumatic experience, depending on if you're holding it in the right place. Pros and cons, right? Is this the perfect way of parenting? Any drawbacks? Any good things?
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, why? Put them to use.
I can almost guarantee that the Samoa and Peru kids are happier.
Yeah?
Than the,
how come? Why?
Having goals, having jobs to do. focused on other people's needs,
mm-hmm.
they're happier
yeah.
than the ones who are not wanting to do anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, wanting
mm-hmm.
to see what others can do for them.
Yeah.
Being me-centered is a very unhappy way to live.
Yeah.
And it is a good foundation to have that you're building a work ethic from a young age. And
yeah.
you're letting kids do what they're actually able to do.
Yeah.
Letting them fail. And
okay. Any drawbacks potentially? Or?
I mean, maybe just they could get hurt.
Possibly if they're chopping firewood and. Right?
Yeah.
Depends on how much they're expected to do, right? What kind of balance there is there. And like you said, maybe in some cases it does become more slave labor and it can be burdensome, right? So potentially there's possibilities, but yeah.
Reminds me a lot of, oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
As I say, it reminds me a lot of just like rural ranch farm kids.
Mm-hmm.
You go on a farm even now and see a lot of
yeah.
young kids doing stuff. It's like, hey, that's pretty impressive.
Right. And sometimes it could be culture, sometimes it could just be necessity. There's a lot to get done. And everybody needs to chip in, and maybe the mom and dad just can't spend their time doing these small tasks. They're busy doing other more important tasks.
Not that I would necessarily agree with this, but an outsider might say that they're missing out on their childhood. They're
yeah.
not able to
right.
explore, play, have fun, and do all those things
mm-hmm.
that for that narrow sliver of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I hear in the American Midwest, and my parents had said this at some times, that you'll have the rest of your life to work, right? And so they want you to enjoy, be a child, play. So there's maybe some of that that can be looked in that perspective. Judy, what do you got?
I think it depends on the time that you're living in.
Uh-huh.
And where you live.
Mm-hmm.
And just different circumstances.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be different, isn't it? Like the expectations.
Way far to an extent. You
mm-hmm.
can either have the children overdoing tasks and then not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that don't do anything grow up to be lazy.
They could, yeah. So
I mean, they're lazy.
Let's talk about, so in contrast in this example, right, what is their role, right? We see the behavior. So what do the kids in this kind of, what do they call it, American middle class families, how do they view their role in the family?
They're the ones being served.
Okay, they're kind of, their parents are there to serve them.
They're like little dictators.
Okay, little dictators.
Characters.
The main characters, okay. Yeah.
Like we've always been self-centered, but even more so.
See, like in this picture, the son, little Ben, right? He's kind of negotiating, asking, telling. So why do you think he has that freedom? Why do you think he was able to do that? What led him to act that way instead of the kids in the? He was allowed to, okay, so it probably wasn't the first time. And mm-hmm.
I think a lot of parents, it's very important that their kids like them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I want to have a good relationship with my kid, and sometimes it might be a reaction against how they were raised. If they're raised by more disciplinarians,
mm-hmm.
they make these vows that I'm going to, you know, be their
mm-hmm.
friend and be their buddy. And
yeah. Yeah, so the parents sometimes want the kids to like them, and so they're acting differently. I don't know if you've been the parent, there have probably been times, and you've seen it, but where the parent is peppering the young child with questions. What would you like? What would you like to drink? What would you like to eat? What would you like to wear? Right? And so it's like this desire to not only please, but there's kind of something underneath going on to where there's a lot of decisions that have to be made in the family, in the life of the child. And so where does that, who's making those decisions, right? That's one of the key differences. And kind of what, Bridget, you're talking about, like sometimes the key to why you might see some kids being happier versus more being disappointed, right? Upset, miserable, is where the burden of making all those decisions lies, right? Because when a child is given that responsibility to make all their decisions, they often make the wrong decisions, and they're disappointed, life doesn't go well, and it's very miserable for them at times. So the question I like to get to, as we're getting kind of to this American middle class, right? Why do parents allow, why do you think we do that? What's the underlying motivation that parents can have to allow kids to have this kind of status in the family? And what are maybe some assumptions that we make? Yeah, easy. Why? What specifically is easy about it?
It's always easier to have a happy child. And so, you know, you just, if they want to a certain thing,
mm-hmm.
it's easier not to argue with them.
Yeah, and what one thing I've seen is that it might be easier short term, right? It's easy to just let them pick. We give it to them, but oftentimes they're not really happy with what they get, and they, I want something else. And then it kind of is this cycle that just keeps escalating. So what else? What's going on there in the with the parents? Why would they have the child hold this position?
Sometimes it's expediency.
Yeah.
It's faster to just put the kids' shoes on than mm-hmm. to wait for them to put them.
Yeah, let's go. We need to get out of here. I can't do it. All right, let me do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's probably that way with almost everything you train your kids to do. That if you're going to train them to do it, it's going to take you a lot longer to have them do it at the beginning. Right? The first time is going to be the longest. And you have to continually do it. So it's an investment. Right? It's a lot of time investment at the beginning. Whereas kind of being where the parent's just doing all the work, it's very little time invested in training the child. It's faster at the beginning, but in the long run. Anything else? Why do the, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's kind of a belief that children are inherently good, and it's institutions
mm-hmm.
that corrupt them.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you don't want to be the one to corrupt them. And I think part of it is just the desire to try to recognize their dignity, their goodness.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be the parent who sends my kids to therapy when they're 30.
Right. Yeah, and I will say that is probably one of the stronger things we see culturally, is that in almost every story, the parents are the ones that have been corrupted and don't really get the purity and the reality of life, where the kids,
mm-hmm.
they really see the way it ought to be. And if they could just help mom and dad understand the purity and the wonders of life, right? That's kind of the cultural picture, right? And so there's this sense where the parents can sometimes take that in and feel like, I must be missing the purity of my young child. And, right, I've got to, give in to their requests and demands. So
it seems like they thought some older parenting, maybe when our parents were kids, was too authoritarian.
Yeah.
And so then they swung the pendulum.
Yeah.
They're like, we don't want to beat our kids. You know,
right.
Like spanking, beating, or whatever. And so then the pendulum has obviously swung way too far.
Yeah. So one way I was thinking about this is like, if you compare them, right? Who's the center, right? Who's at the center? So you've heard of, the talk about, you have the child-centered home, where kind of the parents are there to serve, to satisfy what the child wants, to make the child happy, to make sure that they don't, send their child to therapy with them, kind of scarring them with their authority. And in that sense, again, kind of God is subjected down underneath. And you kind of talked about how there could be, like, in the case where you have the parents kind of are exerting their authority over the child, but maybe they're overly authoritarian, kind of holding on to that authority and abusing that authority, right? So I think ideally what we're talking about is the structure, is that in what we want is that God is the center of our home, right? And then under God is under the authority of God is the parents. And then under the authority of God and the parents, right, is the children. And so that's kind of where we want to understand. And so understanding this relationship, right, that's kind of going to be our key. And trying not to get inverted in either one of these, because I think that this both of these can be a temptation. We can want to switch to the other way and be like, okay, I'm going to take control of this house. And, right, maybe provoke my children to wrath, right? So we'll talk about kind of both of those. But when you look at this, like, why do you think, let's say in the church and for Christian homes, and why do you think we still sometimes struggle with being either one of these two? What's difficult about having that, embracing the authority that God's given you as parents and keeping your kids under the authority of God?
Humbling yourself.
What's that?
Humbling yourself.
Tell me more. Why? What's going on when you're humbling yourself here?
When you're putting God above yourself instead of being like, oh, well, I'm the one in charge. And it's
mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a sense in which you view both your children and yourself as you're both made in the image of God. And so you're both accountable to God. You're both subjected to Him. You are not really the lords of your house. God is the Lord. So you just humble yourself. What else? Be challenging.
It's a lot of work. If you're going to parent your kids according to the way God wants you to, what the Bible says, it takes work. You have to actually do things.
When you tell your child, okay, I'm the authority over you, they go, oh, thank goodness. I've been hoping for an authority. Lead away. I will submit to you joyfully. It doesn't work that way, kids, right? So there's usually a power battle. Right, and usually it's the strongest at the beginning, right? Because it's trying to figure out who's going to be in charge, who's going to be in the authority in our family. So even when they're little bodies, that they've got the strong will to deal with.
I think, but the overflow of our parenting comes out of the overflow of our relationship with the Lord. So if we are not because otherwise you're just telling your kids like, obey because I said so.
Yeah.
You know, instead of like you're saying, like for the glory of God.
Yeah, like in this case, I'm bigger, I'm stronger, right? That's the only reason why. Or I pay the bills. If you don't want to follow my rules, get out of the house, right? There's all these other ways you can justify why they should listen to you or why they should obey you. Do this or else. Threat. So, just a little background here. Throw in some scriptures and some background that. Our goal is with faithful parenting is to help children to see that they are under divine authority, right? We want them to understand that God is the authority over all things, and part of that is understanding that God's commands are not negotiable. So we're going to look through the commandments. At the beginning, we'll look at the fifth commandment. In Matthew 22:37-40, Jesus is summarizing all of the commandments, all the law. He says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And a second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets." And so we're going to look briefly at the Ten Commandments, and we want to remember is that those Ten Commandments are an expansion on those central two. You love God is number one, and you love others, number two. And so as we look at the commands, we see how do we love God, right, in those first commandments? How do we love others in those following commandments? And so as we look at that, as you go through the first four, you see loving God, loving God, loving God. As we go to the fifth, it's kind of a shift. So that's kind of the bridge or the shifting point. Exodus 20:12, honor your father and mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. And so it is true, we've talked about in the past, this was towards Israel, so it's an old covenant, but we have both Colossians 3:20 and Ephesians 6:1-2. Have somebody want to look Look those up or quote them. Anybody know Colossians 3:20? Or you want to look it up? Let's do it. Come on.
Colossians 3:20.
Colossians 3:20, and then Ephesians 6, 1 and 2. Dan's got that one. Okay, here we go.
Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord.
Okay, and Ephesians 6, 1 and 2.
Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise.
All right, so we have, like in the Old Testament, we have the commandments that were given to Israel, and they were to honor. Right? Honor your father and mother. And then in the church?
Mothe?
It's a little R. I just experienced life in Dr. Marshall's classroom. They're always like, what does that word say?
Quit too early.
A little too early. Yeah. All right. And then children, right? They switch to what in the New Testament?
Obey,
right? So we see kind of an equivalence here. Obey. Father and Mothe, or mother. Did we get father too? Father? All right, people.
No, it was an R.
It's an R. I will slow it down.
Father and mother.
And so, when we think about the nature of that, where it's at in the commands, first three, what do we say there? What is the focus of the first three commandments?
Worship,
right? So one, we shall not.
Question? Sorry.
Well, the nature of we're ten commandments.
Okay.
We got five is honor father and mother. So one through four, what are we focusing on?
God alone.
Right? No other gods.
No other gods.
No graven image. His name.
Yeah. Sabbath.
Sabbath. Right? Very much upward, Godward focused. And then the commands afterward?
Kill.
Don't murder.
Don't murder people. Don't lie to people. Don't steal
from
people. Don't
steal.
Yeah.
Coveting.
Yeah. So then this is kind of in between those two, right? So let's talk about, like, we've got obeying here in the New Testament. What do you think it looked like to honor in the Old Testament? What did that mean? That look like? Put yourself back here, back in that time. What would it look like to honor your father and mother?
Take care about them when they're older.
Right? That's one, right? It really hits later on, right? When you're grown, you're going to care for them, you're responsible for them, right? When they're unable to work, unable to provide for themselves. Yeah.
Looking to them for wisdom, all through Proverbs.
Yeah. Looking to them, so that's the positive. You're looking, you're seeking out the wisdom, and kind of on the negative side, you don't just, mom and dad didn't know what they're talking about. You don't reject the guidance that they give you.
It's a little more like with honor, kind of earthly reverence and respect.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit of insight. So if we look at Isaiah 43:23, right? This is the Lord saying, "You have not brought to me the sheep of your burnt offerings, nor have you honored me with your sacrifices. I have not burdened you with offerings, nor wearied you with incense." And so the sense there is we've not valued, right? We haven't brought to the Lord those sacrifices. And so there's a certain valuing aspect too to our parents, that we esteem them and worthy. So, yeah.
Yes. Any advice for maybe people who maybe struggle with that, maybe as adults? Maybe they don't, their dad's in prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I was just recently talking with someone, and it was a marriage where one person was concerned that they were unequally yoked, that maybe their spouse was not actually saved, not actually a believer. And they were discussing the fact, we were talking about, you know, what's the fruit, positive and negative, and what do we see, good fruit, bad fruit. And one of the things that kept coming up was that they had a very, very poor relationship with their father, their earthly father. And that seems to come up a lot in the way that they relate to the Lord, their view of God, and a lot of the negative ways in which they sometimes respond to God, they often are seeing kind of a link in between that. And so there is a sense in which it can be difficult to say, I'm going to honor the Lord in the same way when it's been difficult to honor. So what are there any ways, because your parents, like Dave was saying, is that sometimes you have ungodly or sin, right? Your parents can be acting in a sinful way, even an abusive way. How could a person still honor their father and mother, still obeying the Lord without glorifying maybe their faults? See what I'm saying? What do you think? How could you do that? So if there's some way in which you can help support them to change or to grow.
Relationships can be like not good, because you don't want nothing to do with the person.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same time, when this person asks for help, provide the help.
You're there.
The way you speak about them.
Yeah, that's a huge one. The way you speak about them to your kids, if they're kind of in that grandparent stage, even as a young person. The way you speak about your parents has a huge impact on whether or not you're honoring them, right? So even if they're not acting in a godly, loving way, you can still be godly in your speech as to how you can resist the temptation to complain and to berate them. Okay. So in Deuteronomy 4:9, Moses here is giving the directions to Israel. He says, only take care and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. Make them known to your children and your children's children. And then later in Deuteronomy 11, you shall teach them to your children, talking to them when you are sitting in your house, when you are walking by the way, when you lie down, when you rise. Okay. So why do you think, if we're supposed to honor is a word that's reserved for God, why do you think that God holds parents in such a high esteem in Scripture? Why are the Israelites to honor their parents? Why is that such an important link?
He's the one that's put them in the position that they're in.
Mm-hmm. God is the one who's given you your parents.
So your reaction to them is a direct correlation to your reaction to God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's sometimes there can be a fourth one where as Christians we think that, okay, God is here, and then, right, it's just God has saved us and he will save our children, but it's like there's a disconnect between he's going often does that, like he specifically gives those children to us as the parents, right? And so if we miss this, sometimes we can, like, okay, I'll take my kids to church, right? Or I'll make sure they have a good youth pastor. And we kind of skip and miss that connection between how you are kind of the primary representation, right? Of God's authority, of God's love, of God as a father in that case. So what does that tell you about when your kids are being obedient, disobedient? What does that kind of reveal to you about your kids and their spiritual nature, I guess? If your kids are obeying you, they're disobeying, they're complaining, or they're thankful, right? If we see that this is kind of God has created you to be their his representative, his representative of his authority, of his love, and this is how they're treating you. What's that kind of revealing? Judy?
When you honor someone, you automatically wish to obey them.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you honor God, you want to try to obey his commandments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there, if
a child honors
mm-hmm.
their parents, they don't want to bring any blight on the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't want to speak. If you're a Christian, you don't want to speak badly of God and of
mm-hmm.
other Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And a child would be the same way. They don't want to bring bad things to their parents.
Yeah.
Because anything a child does reflects back
yeah.
on the parents
yeah.
and how they feel about their parents.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Because they, it's like, I don't care what they think.
Yeah, you brought up some really good.
I don't have to care what they think. You know, I'm just going to do my
mm-hmm.
whatever my.
Yeah, I like how you said that, right? When they, if they have a desire to honor their parents, they'll have a desire to obey them. And that there's a reflection aspect of what they're doing reflects on their parents. Yeah.
Yeah, I think when you really honor somebody, their voice has extra weight.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference when you're. If you're a kid, when your mommy talks to you versus somebody else.
Yeah.
And there's a natural weight and authority that's always given to that very special relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not shared with your friends or your siblings. So, you know, telling your big sister you're not the boss of me is not necessarily the wrong thing to say.
Right.
Because you do understand that it's mom and dad who have the,
mm-hmm.
they have the voice, they have the weight. They are to be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever words come out of their mouth means a lot more than any other words you hear.
So really, one of the points we really want to see, it's probably bigger than parenting. We've talked about it in marriage. We've talked about it in the way the church is put together. Who are the people besides our parents? Who are the people that we're commanded to honor? Can you think of any other people, positions?
Government.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So authority in the government, honor the government. Authority in parenting, honor your parents.
Elders.
Authority in the church,
mm-hmm.
honor the leaders of the church. So there's this relationship that whenever God places someone in a position of authority, of responsibility to care for you and to protect you and to lead you, God expects you and commands you to honor those
mm-hmm.
people, to honor your leaders politically, to honor your leaders in the church, to honor the leaders in the home. And so if we break that structure up, right, then we start to see the world differently than the way God has designed it. And so in the home, if we can establish the relationship that God has created authority as a good thing, God is authority, the authority over all things, and we honor him, God has made us the authority over you, and you're to honor us, that makes it easy to translate into the public school, or into when they interact with a police officer, or
mm-hmm.
right,
yeah.
all when they go into a church. And I think what Dave was saying, like you give that special weight, is that you recognize this is a God-ordained
mm-hmm.
way or structure. That when they enter a church, when their pastor gives them direction, they give extra weight to that. Or when a police officer says, no, you can't do that, they give a little extra weight to that than when someone else is given that guidance.
I think that there is a sweetness that happens, maybe especially those teenage kids when they're really battling, you know,
mm-hmm.
like learning their place.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen where one particular kid was really battling against this. As soon as he...
we just randomly, as soon as this child...
Brian's authority, very quickly after that, he became a believer. Because it was learning, I am under
mm-hmm.
him, and then it helped him frame the gospel,
mm-hmm.
and so I think, my point in telling that is, as parents, it's worth the battle.
Yeah.
It's worth the daily
yeah.
Grind.
Yeah.
Because it's not just winning the battle over putting your shoes on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That they can see the sweetness of honoring the Lord.
Yeah. Very much so. And remembering that those are, they're two separate things, right? Establishing and developing that view of authority and becoming under their authority doesn't mean, right, that they're going to be saved or guarantee that. But it's a much more real thing and a much more practically realistic thing to bring your children under your authority than knowing when and how God's going to work in their heart spiritually, okay? So there's, it's often you have families where you have, can faithfully bring your children under the authority, but then you're sowing and planting and watering and waiting for God to do the work of salvation.
And in the meantime, they are blessed. By, like, there is
right.
a blessing promised. If you honor your parents, you are living,
living
under
long.
God's blessing. Yeah. So even if whoever the child was didn't get saved right then, that child still would have been blessed and experiencing
mm-hmm.
that as a young man and not doing dumb things, doing wise things, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think it's a good point to point out that when this structure, the children are blessed and the parents are blessed,
mm-hmm.
right? And when we have, like, this, not only are the parents not blessed, the kids aren't either. They're not happy in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it, I think, as well, is that God equips parents to be able to bear the burden of responsibility. You know, you've heard the expression of heavy is the crown. You put a crown of authority on a two-year-old, it's too heavy for them, and it's going to ruin their life. Because they don't know, they can't bear that weight of that responsibility. And so it's really the opposite of what we think. Like, we think if I let my kid give them what they want, then that's going to be a real blessing to them. When really, you're crushing them under the weight of making all these decisions in their life, where they need to be have a very simple life from the very early age and be taught how to follow your leadership and be under your authority. Now, this question, you might have to use your imagination. I'm sure there's nothing to come up with. What are some ways in which children typically dishonor? Maybe from other families you've heard. Ways in which children typically dishonor their parents. What's typical? Judy, you got something?
Talking back.
Talking back. Sassy. A little sass. That's right.
And using bad language.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, we're working on right now that when Ben hears his name to say either yes, mommy, or yes, daddy, and not, what? Ben, so we'll hear, Ben, what? Yes, daddy. Yes, daddy. He's getting it slowly, picking up on it. Other ways, what do kids do that just dishonors their parents? What's that?
The job half done.
Oh, yeah.
Or not
yeah.
done at all.
Half done, so partial disobedience or just disobedience, right?
Lying to them.
Lying. Oh, that's a big one. That is a big one. Your article touched on that a little bit, too, mm-hmm. about how there's kids can hide things from us
mm-hmm.
from very young and on up,
mm-hmm.
right? And the more they know that their thoughts or their actions are not pleasing to us, the more tempting
yeah.
that's going to be. To deceive us, to lie to us. That was one that we always told our kids and that's the like the worst possible thing. Just no matter what you do, don't ever, right? Because it destroys, it breaks that bond. And it takes work to build that trust. And
mm-hmm.
Other ways?
It seems like they know how to test you in public.
The fit or the tantrum, or
yeah,
they seek their opportunity when you're at your weakest, right? They're distracted, they're in public, right?
full shopping cart,
yeah, big audience. Okay, let's see how mom and dad handle this one. It's true, very strategic.
I think when kids get a little bit older and they can see more faults in their parents. There can be a lot of belittling of them as far as bringing them down a peg.
Mm-hmm. They can see, he's saying they can see the faults in their parents as they get older and more mature, and they can start to really, they think they're understanding life. They can kind of belittle their parents because they can point out the ways in which they know that they fail, they have faults. It's like the Mark Twain when he's 18.
Yeah.
My dad didn't know anything, but 25, I was amazed how much he learned in those 7 years. Just pouting, sulking. I'll do it. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just an overall grumpy, demeanor, bad attitude. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, too, in this day and age, it's easier for children to dishonor their parents in public because there is this fear of punishing your children in public because you can lose control over your children. Someone can report you to authorities, to police, to DFS, whoever, and have your children removed from your home.
Yeah, I think you're
just for simply enforcing your rules.
Judy's pointing out a good point that we live, and in a sense, all of us by nature in our lost state are hostile to God's authority, and by extension, hostile to any authority over us. So whether that be the government, we can complain about their role, or our parents, or even the church, oh, I'm not going to do that. You know. So there's this kind of self-will, self-independence that our kids can have.
Mm-hmm.
I think one way, too, that you can dishonor your parents that I see is this ungrateful complaining that you're never happy with what your parents decide or give you, or I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's the food or where we're going to go or what we're going to do. I wanted to do this, right? Kind of the whining, complaining. That's really a dishonoring way instead of being thankful and grateful.
Like a constant comparison to other parents.
Yeah. I want to be like Johnny's mom and dad, right?
Yeah, I've seen this more in this younger generation, sorry, but when suffering is like righteousness and it's what makes you distinct, and I've seen some children like exaggerate the trauma of their childhood when they had a good childhood,
but they want to have some kind of virtuous suffering.
Yeah, they want to have, so they basically exaggerate
the faults of the parents.
The faults of the parents. I was overspanked or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, and it's not necessarily true.
Right.
Yeah,
so we can go beyond pointing out the faults to just creating them sometimes.
Or embellishing them.
Yeah. Exaggerating them. Yeah.
And that's not to say it doesn't happen, but I think there is a temptation to exaggerate and embellish your suffering.
I think our generation had that too. I mean,
yeah.
Blame your parents for all your problems.
Yeah.
Now that you're the parents, we're like, ooh, ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's easy to do that when you don't have kids.
Yeah, and I think there's, and this could be in every generation, there was a time where many kids were, they would dishonor them in the sense that they would almost disconnect and just live where there's really no connection. So the kind of the kids that grew up in front of the TV and the parents just worked and there really wasn't any relationship.
Yeah.
And so they wouldn't really bash their parents, but they just, my parents don't really know what's going on. They're living a totally separate life. And you kind of dishonor them by, you're just waiting to get out of the house and live your own life. And there's a total disconnect. Kind of like when we talked about in marriage, how you can just become roommates where you're just living in the same home. But there's no real relationship going on. It's kind of a downer to talk about all the negatives.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Right? So we did point out, so go ahead, turn page, right? Part G, right? Paul's New Testament restatement, he chooses to say, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. So, you know, the way to honor is through obeying. So, what do you think the obedience would look like? So this is a real good question, a very, very practical question. You hit on it a little bit. Like, if the children are supposed to obey, how do you know, right, what does it look like to obey your parents, and how do you know specifically when they've disobeyed?
A happy heart.
A happy heart, that's a big one, right? I'll put it under here. So if they do it, but they're grumpy, are you going to count that as obedience? They're complaining? Okay, we're going to put happy heart here. Happy, H-E-A-R-T. Get them all in there.
Quickly and completely.
Who said that? Quickly and what?
Completely.
I think that knocked out two for me. So we got quickly and completely. We would always say for these two, all the way, right away. Right? Oh, that was the motto. All the way, right away. With
the happy
heart. Right? All the way, right. You know, the kids, right? Not, that was not all the way, right? Oh.
Yeah, I think it's really important that it's the authority that decides whether or not obedience has happened,
mm-hmm.
not the person being asked to do it.
Right. It was like when Saul was approached, and I have obeyed you.
Mm-hmm.
I've obeyed the Lord. And like, what is the bleeding of the sheep
yeah.
that I hear? Like, no, you did not fully obey. So, yeah, the authority is the one that determines what obedience looks like. It's not the person that's, you can't go to your boss and say, they criticize what you did. No, what I did is what you said. No, I'll tell you when you've done your job, right? When you've done
mm-hmm.
it completely. Ancient Near East, what do you think? We talk about in the context. So let's go back to New Testament times or the time of Israel. What would obedience look like? For them, would it look just like this? Any other changes or differences?
I think one thing that we have now that's a little bit different is a formalized education system, whether it's homeschooling or not, and that wasn't necessarily what they had back then.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I notice, I guess in the Hintz household, right, we try to make sure, like, doing their homework.
Yeah.
And their school is, like, top
yeah.
priority as part of what we want for them so that they can,
mm-hmm.
Provide for themselves and be independent
mm-hmm.
eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's kind of a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's very different. They were like slaves back then, and now we're like, how can I get you to your next appointment?
Right,
your next
yeah.
lesson?
Yeah. And there's this, in fact, that they were totally, there was no like child rights,
yeah.
child labor. There was no protections in a sense. And also, like they were saying, is that there wasn't a culture that sent the kids out for kind of parenting. So,
or even like homeschooling, like, the emphasis that we have on education
mm-hmm.
in our culture, literacy rates and everything, is very different from what they had back then.
Yeah.
They would have been learning to do a trade or to cook and clean, like useful things, immediately
right.
useful
There's,
things.
They learn it and apply
totally
it right
useless,
away.
So they're like 22.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So they're learning, but they're not expected to do anything with it through first, just go to school. And the answer is, so, right, when am I going to use this? Well, you're going to use it next year and the next grade. And
mm-hmm.
So there's a disconnect between what you're learning and what you're expected to do with that learning. Whereas
mm-hmm.
at that time, as they were taught, as they were applying. So here's how you pick vegetables, right? You see there, here's how you gather fuel. Here's how you clean up after the meal, right? One note is that the household would organize tasks according to gender by the time they reach adolescence,
mm-hmm.
assigning males labor that required greater strength and danger, like hunting or handling the livestock, butchering cattle and sheep. Females would be trained in special skills needed to run the household, harvesting vegetables, preparing food, spinning yarn, knitting garments, caring for babies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like the only limiting factor in that time as to what they were doing is their physical and mental abilities. As soon
uh-huh.
as they are physically and mentally able to do something, they are trained and then expected to do those things.
Mm.
Whereas we're in a different, where we're almost like holding back, right? I know you're able, and we could train you to do this, but don't do it yet. Don't do it yet. Don't do it yet. Yeah.
Yeah, I think when children become adults has changed according to society.
Mm-hmm.
When a boy becomes a man, when a woman becomes, or a girl becomes a woman,
yeah,
that has become higher and higher and higher. And because of that, children are not being taught sooner
yeah.
to do what they should as an adult.
Yeah, there's a. I would say there's a very strong connection, right, between when they're trained, when they're able to do things, right? The earlier that's done, the earlier they are recognized as a man or a woman, right? As now, like Alina was saying, that's being pushed further and further and further. You have, they're 16, 17, 18, sometimes 19, 20. They're living at home. They're not working. They're not able to go out and provide. They don't know how to do so many things because for so long that's been put off and put off and put off. I ran into a student that I had that was very socially awkward and had difficulty in class, and he barely graduated, and I saw him a couple years later, still no job, still living at home with his mom, and just, he says, I've tried, and he's telling about all the fast food places he had tried to apply to and get a job, and just had never developed the social skills to interact with other people. He was just mostly on his video games a lot growing up, in his room, very isolated. So there's kind of these extreme ways in which we're in a culture where, because of the lack of necessity, right, because our kids don't have to work, they don't have to do those things, we often reject the value. We can reject the value of them. So put your kids to work right away.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a good one, right? Oh, we'll save it for next time. That's time's up. Time's up. Be thinking, to what extent must children obey their parents? All right, let me pray for us. Father, it is a gift that you've given us the structure of a family. It's a gift that you made man and woman to be united in marriage, that you created them in a way that they could create children made in your image and raise them, teach them, love them, and that you created us to represent you to them. I pray that you'd help us as we think and study. Help us to really honor you and represent you well in the lives of our children and to treat them as beautiful gifts, image bearers that are worthy of your love, and help them to learn to obey and honor their parents. In Jesus' name.